Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. The magic key turns, and the family of RCA, whose members include RCA Victor, RCA Communications, and the National Broadcasting Company, unite to present over the nationwide NBC Blue Network a full hour of distinguished entertainment, featuring Robert Benchley, noted lecturer on facts, figures, and fancies, the celebrated dancer Bill Robinson, star of stage, screen, and radio, Gertrude Wedergren, contralto of the Metropolitan Opera Company, Edward Johnson, General Manager of the Metropolitan Opera Association, Marcia Davenport, musical authority and commentator, Bobby Green, Hollywood's newest child singing star, and Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra, who begin this afternoon's hour with Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C-sharp minor. It is hard to imagine any event that might add importance to the career of 9-year-old Bobby Breen, who has already won stardom in vaudeville, moving pictures, and radio. Last week, however, even greater laurels went to this youngster when his latest moving picture, Rainbow on the River, had its premiere showing at the great Radio City Music Hall. In this new picture, which was produced by Sol Lesser, the man who discovered Bobby Breen, the young star achieves the most significant performance in his career. Today, the magic key turns to the screen's newest star, little Bobby Breen. As a choir boy in the picture Rainbow on the River, Bobby Breen scores an overwhelming hit with Schubert's familiar hymn, Ave Maria, which he sings again for us this afternoon. Bobby Breen sings next, Rainbow on the River, the theme song from his new picture.
Clouds over me form a white tapestry, sky into water blending. Winds dying down, it's so peaceful. Now that the storm is ending, see what nature's handiwork has done. After every shower comes the sun. There's a rain.
In the spring of 1935, the Metropolitan Opera Association parted with the tradition of 52 years and made one of its leading tenors, Edward Johnson, general manager of the entire organization. While this may seem an unconventional thing to do, those who knew Mr. Johnson were not concerned about the Metropolitan's sudden departure from tradition. For in addition to being an able singer and a consummate artist, Mr. Johnson had established a reputation for persuasive diplomacy. Mr. Johnson, during his first year as general manager, did much to bring the splendor and beauty of the Metropolitan performances within the reach of more people. This year, he was quick to lend his efforts to arranging the Radio Corporation of America's sponsorship of the Saturday afternoon broadcast of the opera. Today, Mr. Johnson is here in the studio, where he has come not as a singer, but as general manager of the Metropolitan Opera Association. Mr. Edward Johnson.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am extremely happy that the Radio Corporation of America, the National Broadcasting Company, and the Metropolitan Opera Association are going to work together during the coming season to bring you the very best broadcasts of the very finest opera performances within our power to present. There is no single phase of the work of our organization during the next few months that will carry greater weight with me than the matinee opera broadcasts. For it is through these radio programs that we hope to see opera become a more and more integral part of the life of this country. I am delighted to have at my side Marcia Davenport, who is to be your commentator during the Saturday afternoon series of broadcasts beginning December 26th, and also for the matinee broadcast of Hansel and Gretel the day before Christmas. It seems to me that Marcia Davenport has a fortunate combination of qualifications for this task. She not only brings a fresh and vital point of view to what she says and writes about music, but she is familiar with the operatic stage and knows its ins and outs as well as those of us who have been singing behind the footlights. She is the daughter of Alma Gluck, who was one of the Metropolitan's great stars. Ever since Marcia Davenport was a small child, she has spent much of her time around opera houses and with opera singers. And in addition, she has learned the knack of making music and musicians a fascinating subject to all who read or listen. You no doubt may have read some of her articles in the leading magazines. And if you are acquainted with her recent biography of Mozart, you will understand why it has become not only a bestseller, but a standard work on the subject. I am very happy to present to you Marcia Davenport.
Good afternoon. This is a great pleasure, Mr. Johnson. Now, let's tell everybody what we expect to bring them in the opera broadcast this winter.
That's a large order, Mrs. Davenport. Opera is a very big subject.
I know. And the more you have to do with it, the bigger it gets. Isn't it wonderful how the Metropolitan's audiences are increasing?
Yes, it is. The audiences are growing all the time, especially the radio audience. What's more, they're becoming much more active in listening to opera.
Now, what do you mean by that? I thought people only had to sit still at their radios and listen. What else ought they to do?
Well, to get the most out of opera, they ought to bring something to the listening, just as we bring all our efforts to the performing.
I see. A performance is really only alive when the audience is doing its share as well as the artist. What do you think makes an ideal audience?
An audience that is alert and understanding. An audience who listens full of expectancy and eagerness.
That doesn't necessarily mean they must be experts on music, does it?
Not at all. The simpler and more direct they are, the more they get out of their listening. We can bring them so much more if they bring something themselves.
Tell me, what do you think the audience's chief contribution should be?
Well, I should say a certain natural curiosity about the music and the singing, just as people are naturally curious about human events in the news.
That's the wonderful thing about talking to a radio audience.
Quite right. I believe that radio does more to quicken and increase our audience than anything else. People are hearing opera now who never thought about it 5 years ago.
And now they consider it part of their lives, don't they?
And when they feel it is an indispensable part, they will want more and more of it.
Well, I'm just folksy enough to say music is like popcorn. You know, the more you eat, the more you want.
Yes, right you are. And when you taste it for the first time, what a thrill it is.
I agree with you. And when you first hear great music on the radio, what a thrill that gives you.
And it does more than that. It's filling up the gaps that remain after most people are all grown up and educated.
What sort of gaps?
I mean the lapses in the average person's education, not the lacks. Most people are not educated to consider opera as part of their daily lives. Radio has changed all that. It has brought opera to the front door, and all they have to do is to be interested enough to let it in.
Radio is being a teacher, in other words.
Yes, but I wouldn't use so prosaic a word as that. After all, radio is also entertainment and pleasure and fun, especially if you are up on your job.
Oh, now I'm scared.
Well, you know what I mean. It's up to you to tell the audience about the plots and the characters and the artists and whatever else is necessary to give them a complete picture, to be their eyes, as it were.
I'll try my best. We're counting on fine things from you, too, you know. Your repertoire, for instance. Are you going to be generous there?
I should say we are. We are planning our Saturday afternoon programs to include a complete panorama of opera, from its early days to the present.
And in various languages, all the original languages of the operas to be sung?
Certainly. We shall present opera in Italian, French, German, and English, representative works of each group. And the audience may compare the different groups and observe the influence of the one upon the other.
And the singers. Of course, you're going to do great things for us in casting.
We hope so. We plan on Saturdays to give the public our finest artists so that they may hear opera in its very best manner.
The Metropolitan artists are fine, too. You really are the only opera company of your kind, aren't you?
I believe we are. The Metropolitan has always been famous for giving the operas in their original tongues, and, when possible, with the artists born to sing them. We have our German wing, our Italian wing, our French wing...
And your international wing.
Some of our best artists belong to that. They sing in three or four languages. I am especially proud that we have such a very versatile company.
Well, the public is all excited about your opening tomorrow night.
And so are we. For the first time in 35 years, the Metropolitan is opening with a Wagner opera. The place is a beehive of activity.
I know. I've been in there several times this week. Rehearsals in every corner of the house. It will be a most exciting and interesting opening.
Yes, and we expect to do some very other interesting things later.
We're all waiting for them. Thank you so much, Mr. Johnson.
And thank you, Mrs. Davenport. Goodbye until the 24th, and Merry Christmas, everybody.
Until the 24th, Thursday afternoon, the day before Christmas, when we will begin our Metropolitan broadcast with Humperdinck's beloved children's classic, Hänsel und Gretel.
One of the most significant debuts made last season at the Metropolitan was that of Gertrude Wedergren. Coming to America after a distinguished career in the Royal Opera of Stockholm, Madame Wedergren appeared in Aida, Tristan and Isolde, Tannhäuser and Carmen. Now acclaimed by audience and critics alike, she is assured of a glorious American career too. You will hear her in the role of Delilah in Samson and Delilah next Saturday afternoon in the second broadcast of the Metropolitan Opera Company, sponsored by the Radio Corporation of America. The magic key of RCA turns to Madame Gertrude Wedergren. The This afternoon, Madame Vettergren will sing the famous aria Amour vient d'air from the opera Samson and Delilah by Saint-Saëns. Madame Vettergren has selected for her second number the Habanera from the colorful Spanish opera Carmen, in which she won extraordinary praise during the Metropolitan's last season.
Woo!
The one organization equipped to serve you in every branch of radio is the Radio Corporation of America, head of the family of RCA, a family whose members include RCA Victor, RCA Photophone, RCA Communications, Radio Marine, RCA Institutes, and the National Broadcasting Company. Each member of this family serves you individually, and all unite to bring you the full benefits that result from unparalleled resources, experience, and research facilities. For every service in radio, use RCA. The Magic Key, unlocking a world of entertainment featuring Robert Benchley, Bill Robinson, Gertrude Wedergren, Edward Johnson, Marcia Davenport, Bobby Breen, and Frank Black, and the NBC Symphony Orchestra, presented for your interest and pleasure by members of the family of RCA, the Radio Corporation of America. A journey through Italy inspired the composer Felix Mendelssohn to write the colorful Italian Symphony, from which Frank Black has chosen the first movement to be played next by the NBC Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you.
entire Italian Symphony of Mendelssohn, the first movement of which you have just heard played by Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra, has been recorded for Victor by the Boston Symphony with Sergei Koussevitzky directing. It is one of the many complete symphonies, operas, and instrumental works now available on Victor Records in bound albums. Containing the world's finest music recorded by the world's greatest artists, these Victor albums make ideal Christmas gifts, for they will be remembered and appreciated through the year.
The first 50 years are the hardest for a dancer. The second 50 are usually an impossibility. But Bill Robinson, who celebrated his 50th anniversary as a dancer just a week ago, intends to go on just the same. From now on, he'll just be dancing for fun, because he's won every honor a dancer can win. Star of vaudeville, Broadway, and the motion pictures, there are no more worlds for this amiable and universally beloved tap dancer to conquer. The magic key of RCA turns to Bill Robinson. Bill, it's awfully good to see you again. But what was that little argument you were having a few moments back there?
Well, the fella that passed me is from Richmond, Virginia, and yes. In Richmond, Virginia, they used to call me Shine.
Shine.
And I was trying to explain to him why they called me Shine.
Well, go to it.
When I was born, they christened me Plain Samuel Johnson Brown. I hadn't grown so very tall for some folks in the town. Had changed it all round to Sambo, and I was Rastus to a few. Then that name Chocolate Drop, that was added by some others that I knew. Now then, to cap the climax, I went strolling down the line when someone shouted, "Fellas, hey, come on and pike the shine." But I don't care a bit, here's how I figured it. Say, my hair is curly and my teeth are pearly. It is just because I always wear a smile, and I'm sometimes dressed up in the latest style. Say, folks, I'm glad I'm leaving, and I take trouble smiling never while, just because my color shade is slightly different, maybe. That's why they call me Shine. Listen here. A rose, they say, by any other name would smell as sweet. Now, if I'm right, why should I let a little nickname take me off my feet? Everything in this world that is precious, from a gold piece to a dime, why, there's diamonds, pearls, and rubies, they ain't no good unless they shine. Now, when these clever people look at me and they call me Shine a Coon of Smoke, why, I simply smile, and I smile some more, then I vote them all a joke. But I'm thinking, just the same, now tell me, what is there in a name? Say, my hair is curly, and my teeth are pearly. It is just because I always wear a smile, sometimes dressed up in the latest style. Say, I'm glad I'm leaving, and I take trouble smiling never why, just because my color shading slightly different, maybe. That's why they call me Shine. That's why they call me Shine. That's why they call me Shine.
That was fine, Bill. Fine.
You know, I feel kind of proud today.
Proud about what, Bill?
Well, just imagine a master dancer like Fred Astaire put me in his picture.
You mean in that swing time picture?
That's it.
You mean that, I forget the title.
I'll tell you the title.
What's your nickname?
My nickname, Bojangles of Harlem.
Oh, give it to us.
So this afternoon, I think I should pay a tribute to the greatest dancer that ever lived, Fred Astaire, and dance for you my nickname, Bojangles of Harlem. This is the left foot, folks. You can't see me, but I don't want to cheat you. Here's the right. Shoot me while I'm happy. Here's where that Bojangles come in. Get the off time. Stepping off the subway slightly to Harlem. Oh, I hope little Shirley Temple is listening.
Writers and actors spend their lives trying to get into the public eye. Robert Benchley, if you believe a word he says, has spent most of his life trying to get the public out of his eye, out of both eyes, according to Mr. Benchley. And perhaps that's why he's been set up as a public authority number one on how to vote, eat, sleep, pay your income tax, and relax. A few weeks ago, Mr. Benchley gave one of his interesting and educational talks on the Magic Key program. And today, with the public still completely bewildered, he's back again. Robert Benchley. Yes, right over here, Mr. Benchley, this microphone.
Right over here.
Well, we might as well face it. Next Friday is Christmas. And what I want to do today is more or less get ready for the thing, and if possible, to get you ready. Although I don't know why I should be bothering about you. I haven't even got my last year's presents wrapped up yet. It's the wrapping up that causes all the delay, that and the shopping. And I want to give you a few pointers on wrapping up presents, and at the same time maybe learn a little something myself. Now I have a present here, which you can't see, fortunately. Otherwise it wouldn't be a surprise. And I'm going to wrap it up for you, I hope. The main idea in wrapping up a Christmas present with red ribbon is so that you can tell it from a bundle of wet wash, because if a present isn't wrapped up fancy, you might not know it was a present. First, though, let me say that there are several rules which the post office department has worked up, which more or less limit the kind of present that you can send through the mail. In the first place, it's difficult to send livestock unless properly wrapped. A small goat can be sent, or a sheep, but it must be clearly labeled and in pretty good physical condition. Now, we might as well concentrate on a small goat, as that's what I've got for you today. And you might as well know it now. And I'm going to try to wrap it up for you. If you have a small goat already, you can exchange it. The people at the goat place said that if you didn't like it, you could take it back after the rush, and they'd give you another. But just wait till after the Christmas rush, that's all. Now, in wrapping up a goat, you have to remember that there aren't many places where a goat is popular. So it's necessary to disguise it as much as possible. This goat, we're going to try to wrap up so that it looks as if it were a bicycle. And if you think that's going to be easy, you're crazy. I have here a few facts about goats which may help you in your problem. Well, it isn't your problem. It's my problem, I suppose. It won't do you a bit of harm to listen. Incidentally, if you think that this seems like Sunday, wait till next Friday. There'll be a Sunday for you. Now, in wrapping up a goat for shipment... Oh, still, honey. Still, don't do that. It's necessary to know that in 1912, the year of the war, there were 75,000 goats... Or is that ghosts? No, that's goats. 75,000 goats were shipped into Central America alone. This does not include Central America. Well, let's face the fact that this sort of thing goes on. Now, taking one goat as a unit... Don't do that, baby. Don't do that, baby. No, you cannot. I stop that. We have 75,000 goats divided into a ratio of 2 to 1, 10 to 1, 2 to 1, or 38,000 goats, some of which are barely able to walk. Is this a sensible way of running things? Or is it even legal? Well, anyway, we came here to wrap up a goat, not to talk about him. Him, her. Oh, yeah, I don't know. As I look at it, the first thing to do is to get the goat to stand on the paper and pull the paper up around the goat if we can. Don't you think so? That's the way to do it. Come on now, honey. Honey, come on, stand still now. Don't do that. Hey, come here. Get some paper up here. Give me some paper. Give me some of that string. Some of that red ribbon. Can I get some... Hey, come here now, honey. Don't you do that now. Hold still now. All right, come here. Now, give me up here, get off there. Come on now. Come on down on the paper now. That, baby, if you don't hold still, how can Papa wrap you up? There we are. Now, give me a Christmas seal, somebody. There we go. Hey, no, hey, come back here. Come back here, honey. Come here. Oh, well, let her go.
Frank Black, General Musical Director of the National Broadcasting Company, directs the NBC Symphony Orchestra in the Slavonic Dance No. 1 by Anton Dvorak.
When you are choosing your Christmas radio, we suggest that you bear in mind that most programs are sent out on the air perfectly by means of RCA broadcasting and transmitting equipment. And to hear them with complete pleasure, you should have a radio receiver that gives you reception to match the quality of the broadcasting. That kind of performance is assured when you buy an RCA Victor radio and guarantee for yourself radio reception that is RCA all the way, from the microphone to your receiving set. Discover for yourself how the magic voice, magic brain, magic eye, and RCA metal tubes bring you reception that matches the fidelity with which RCA equipment and NBC engineering put programs on the air. You can afford to give an RCA Victor radio for Christmas, for prices begin at $20, and there are 28 attractive models selling for under $100. Your RCA Victor dealer will gladly arrange convenient terms and a liberal trade-in allowance. Next Sunday afternoon, the members of the family of RCA, which includes RCA Victor, RCA Communications, and the National Broadcasting Company, invite you to tune in again to the Blue Network of the NBC, when the magic key will again turn to present another full hour of entertainment, an hour that will feature John McCormack, world-renowned Irish tenor, Richard Himber and his Victor Recording Orchestra, the historic Moscow Cathedral Choir, and the popular English humorist and monologuist, Oliver Wakefield, speaking from England, and Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra. Ben Grauer. And Alois Avila speaking for one member of the family of RCA, the National Broadcasting Company.